Water has always been political, but now more than ever. And Milwaukee is sitting on a gold mine, the Great Lakes, the largest body of fresh water on the planet, 1/5 of the world's fresh water supply, 84% of North America's. So the stakes could not be bigger. Who owns this water? Who gets to use it? And more importantly, who protects it? So here's our own Milwaukee native, Steve Paulson.
I grew up in Milwaukee on the east side, went to Riverside High School. I was a tennis player. I spent more hours than you could possibly count hanging out on the tennis courts at Lake Park. So I spent a lot of time looking out at Lake Michigan, which to a kid looks pretty much like an ocean, vast and magnificent. And then every so often I'd go down to Bradford Beach and find the whole shoreline littered with thousands of dead, rotting fish, alewives, and that was not so magnificent. So for me, this was the paradox of growing up near Lake Michigan, beautiful, but also infested and polluted, and that's really the recurring story of cities built along the water. It's not just Milwaukee, but cities all over the world. These are global issues. So we have a lot to talk about here. And lucky for us, we have two terrific guests to help us sort it all out. Dan Egan is the Great Lakes reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Jenny Kale is a political economist at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Freshwater Sciences. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dan, you have written a great book, The Death and Life of the Great Lakes, and you grew up on Lake Michigan in Green Bay, right?
Essentially, yeah. I grew up pretty close to the banks of the Fox River.
So did you spend a lot of time on the water then?
I did, and not always in a manner that my parents appreciated. It wasn't so much because they were afraid we were going to drown, but it was like playing at the dump. It is one of the most heavily industrialized rivers in the world, and it's just lined with pulp and paper companies. And I remember playing along the banks of the river, and we would pick out little nuggets of sulfur. I didn't know at the time that it was a product of the pulp making process, but we'd bring it home and light it on fire, and it would ooze and give this sulfurous stink, and it was just like a low-grade firework. And you know, I thought that was natural.
So what's the state of the river now? Is it still polluted?
That's a great question. You know, when I was a kid, you'd see the odd fishermen, and they were odd to be fishing down there. Today, there's walleye tournaments where you could walk across a river that's almost a half mile wide just from boat to boat. It's that packed. So there has been a remarkable recovery. There's more to do, but it's going in the right direction.
Now, Jenny, you have traveled all around the world. You are an expert on water security, water rights. So there are a number of threats, of course, to a city's water. One is the question of water safety. Is Milwaukee's water safe to drink?
The water is safe, but the infrastructure is aging. A lot of our pipes are over 100 years old. It's creating some concerns about public health and consumption of lead through water. People should filter their water. And I think it, along with Dan's point, brings into question how committed are we to cleaning up some of the water infrastructure that's actually contaminating one of the world's best, cleanest, safest water sources.
You're saying people should filter their water? They shouldn't just drink it straight out of the tap?
They should filter it at point of use.
Why?
Well, to keep the contaminants out, particularly from the 100-year-old aging pipes, to make sure there's not lead and other contaminants in that water.
And there have been some serious issues, right, over the years?
There have, and one that we discussed was the 1993 Cleptosporidium outbreak and the concerns that had for the public here in Milwaukee. Over 400,000 people in the city were affected. One of the things that I found is that different communities were affected disproportionately, which is a great concern when we talk about water equity issues in the Milwaukee area. And I learned last year at the Sustainability Summit from one of the participants that was in his late 20s. He was a child when they had the Cleptosporidium outbreak, and he was in an economically disenfranchised zip code. And he will go to dialysis 5 days a week for the rest of his life as a result of the kidney problems he had when he was a child because of that one Cryptosporidium outbreak. He had 6 family members die from kidney problems as a result of that outbreak, and lives in a community in which 25 years later, they're still experiencing some very serious health concerns as a result of that one outbreak. So it really raises the stakes for us in how we want to commit to preventing those kinds of outbreaks, particularly with the current concerns about lead in the water, and addressing those before we have a public health crisis.
Dan, what do you see as some of the key threats to the safety of our water?
It doesn't really hit you in the face, but it's invasive species. In 2014, our fellow Great Lakes city, Toledo, lost its drinking water for 2 or 3 days, and that was because of a toxic algae outbreak. And that algae is largely driven by invasive mussels, and it's odorless and invisible to anybody looking at the lake. And it went into the drinking water intake in Toledo. And at 2 a.m., a do not drink order went out. It wasn't like the crypto outbreak where it was boil. This was do not drink because you're only going to contaminate this toxin. By 7 or 8 the next day, Ann Arbor was out of drinking water, their shelves. And you think about this. This is a city of about 500,000 people sitting on the edge of the world's largest freshwater system. And the National Guard is rolling in with pallets of baby formula. It was crazy.
So you mentioned that invasive species are a huge problem for the Great Lakes, and there have been a whole series of invasive species over the years. More recently, it's been especially zebra mussels and quagga mussels. Yeah. How bad a problem is this?
You know, it's kind of hard to impress upon people how significant these mussels have changed things and for the worse. You know, it's easy to think, oh, it's just another species in the lake, and, you know, you can't see them. As a matter of fact, they've cleared up the water remarkably, but that doesn't mean clean water. A healthy Great Lake, a healthy Lake Michigan is like a brothy green, and the mussels have basically sucked all the plankton, all that green, down to the bottom and have locked it up in their little shells. Now, that's not just trouble for the fish. Another example of how you can look at these things as not organisms but as pollution is what's happened over on Michigan's shoreline of Lake Michigan in the last 10 or 15 years. So the mussels have cleared up the water. That's opened the door for this native algae to grow on the bottom. That stuff eventually dies, it decomposes, and it burns up lots of oxygen where botulism bacteria thrives. Now, the mussels aren't affected by this bacteria, so they're doing just fine. And along comes another invasive species called the round goby. It's a little bug-eyed fish, not much bigger than your thumb, and it eats mussels. That's what it's designed to do. They both came from the Caspian Sea Basin, the mussels and the fish. So the fish eats it, gets botulism. They float to the surface, and then all manner of birds, pick a species, eat the gobies, and then they die of botulism, and they're washing ashore. There's just beautiful sand beaches with no industry anywhere near, just littered with dead birds poisoned by essentially this little mollusk.
So the follow-up to that is, if Milwaukee's identity historically and culturally is really dependent on the Great Lakes, on the health of the Great Lakes, what happens to the city as the lake itself suffers?
Well, as somebody who's written a book called Death and Life of the Great Lakes, I can say that Lake Michigan isn't dying, and it's not going to be dead anytime soon. It isn't the same lake that it was, and it never will be. But that doesn't mean we can't reach a new natural balance. What they're seeing is these gobies aren't always eating botulism-tainted mussels. Often they're just eating the mussels, and any native species that can eat these gobies is doing well, and the native species are doing that. You're seeing a resurgence in lake trout and whitefish and walleye, and so the top of the food chain is looking more like its old self than it has in 70 or 80 years, but there are problems. And, you know, we used to have a very vibrant commercial fishery here on Lake Michigan. Milwaukee used to be a fishing town, and in 2011, we lost our last commercial fisherman to Alaska because he ran out of fish to catch. He was saying at the time he could catch more fish in one day in Alaska than he was catching all year out on Lake Michigan. And I went out with him on one of his final days on the lake, and afterwards, we went back and we were visiting with his parents. He was a third generation commercial fisherman. And his parents were devastated that he was going to be moving his family, he had kids, up to Alaska. And I remember his mom was crying, and he looked at me and just kind of rolled his eyes and said, I keep telling her, I'm not leaving this lake. This lake left me. So, yeah, in many ways, the old Lake Michigan is gone, but that doesn't mean we can't have a Lake Michigan with a brighter future if we stop these invasions.
We've been talking about various issues involving water safety. There are other issues facing us when it comes to water. One is, who gets to own this water? Who gets to own the Great Lakes? Because I think my guess is pretty much everyone in this audience would say, this is our water. No one else gets it. But I'm guessing that in the coming decades, there will be people in those dry cities, you know, maybe Phoenix, maybe Las Vegas, who are going to say, we want some of your water. We need some of your water. And it raises some profound issues of, you know, should everyone have access to water? Is that a human rights issue, or do we get to keep our water?
I do believe it's a human right. I believe water is a critical human right because it does affect our capacity to survive and to thrive. And that calls into question, as you mentioned, what level of water use do you have a right to consume depending upon where you choose to live? So we're very fortunate in the Great Lakes because we have this tremendous and abundant and vital and vast water resource. But does that mean that someone who moves to Phoenix does not have the right to water? And I believe that they do. But do they have a right to consume it in the way that they would if water were abundant? And I don't believe that's the case. I believe people have the right to water for their health and sanitation. But if you want to fill a swimming pool or water a golf course or clean a hotel, I believe that water should be increasingly expensive depending upon the level of water scarcity in your region.
Dan, do you think we are on the verge of a new era of water wars?
No, but we've got to be vigilant. I used to think that it was insane that we could actually pump enough water out of the lakes to do appreciable damage. And then I started doing some reporting on how much oil, how much tar sands oil we're bringing into the Great Lakes Basin. And it's, I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe it's about 2.1 to 2.6 billion barrels a day. And I pushed some numbers around one time, and that is equivalent to the flow of the Milwaukee River in a dry summer. So we're moving a river of this stuff, and it comes out of the ground hard as a hockey puck. It's got to be melted, but it's still like glue, and we're pushing this from Western Canada to the shores of Lake Superior. Well, that pipe can run things backwards, too, and you know, I think water would be easier to push. So physically, yeah, I think it's a threat, but I think we've taken the steps that we can to, at this point, to adequately protect outsiders from scheming to take it away. And I can appreciate your concern about water being a human right, but water isn't a golf course's right or a pistachio's right. And there's enough water for humans. It's just the way the humans are using it.
So obviously a lot of issues that we've been talking about here, a lot to be addressed. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was our executive producer, Steve Paulson, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Great Lakes reporter, Dan Egan. He's also the author of The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. And from UWM's renowned School of Freshwater Sciences, political economist Jenny Kale.